Well, the very busy month of Tishri is rapidly coming to a close, as is the service, too, by the way, in case you were wondering. We've been telling the stories that help us reflect and move forward on our Jewish journey. But let me say very briefly, when I say we've been telling the stories, it's not stories that are made up. It's stories that are historical stories. So if you want to say it, we've been telling the histories or his stories that help us reflect and move forward on our Jewish journey. And now we approach the grand finale of the season, Simchat Torah. Rejoicing in the Torah as a community of learners, is exhilarating, or at least it should be, was intended to be. On Simchat Torah, Jews all around the world dance with the Torah. And we'll get to do that. Children on the top of their parents' shoulders, old and young singing together, dancing together. Frequently, the Torah scrolls are decked out with crowns, as if to picture royalty coming among the celebrating subjects. But actually, there's something a bit incongruous, almost out of place, you would say, about this scene of royalty mixing with the common people in a raucous manner. Perhaps something inappropriate, even. You see, the rabbis refer to the crown of Torah as a picture of authority. The crown implies hierarchy. It implies distinctions between leaders and followers. However, in the 12th century, Maimonides, the great rabbi of the Middle Ages, or one of them, offers to us another perspective on or dimension to the crown of the Torah, one that is both somewhat counterintuitive and at the same time, it's absolutely fundamental. He writes that just as the monarchy and just as the priesthood were dynastic, in other words, they passed down from parent to child, so too is Torah study dynastic. But he says, not in the way we might think. He cites the verse, Moses commanded us the Torah as the heritage of the community of Jacob, as the heritage of the whole community of Jacob. And by that, I don't mean his community, because his name is Jacob, but he's part of the larger community of Jacob. Quick aside, and I'll be brief. Let's remember that when Jacob had his name changed to Israel, as this tells you, he didn't have the name changed. Huh? No, he got an additional name. The old name was still plenty good, because it was a name of blessing. This helps us remember that. Back to our story. Okay. The Rambam, Maimonides, then explains that all of Israel, as this verse says, all of Israel has inherited the Torah. And in fact, we were reminded of this probably about 3-4 weeks ago when we were reading the Parsha from Deuteronomy chapter 29, verses 10 to 15. And it adds another dimension to the idea that all of Israel has inherited the Torah. Because Moses said to the people standing there, and you'll remember the text says this, the men, the women, the children, the various kinds of workers or servants, and the stranger or the foreigner who's among you, all were included. In other words, those who joined with Israel were included in part of this heritage. And then he goes on to say something very striking. It's not just with you that God is making this covenant, or actually he wasn't making it, he was renewing it, as the text tells us. It's not just with you that I'm renewing this covenant, but all those who come after you. It's to be passed on generation to generation to generation, which is why when we stood before God to receive the Torah yet again, it's as if we took a step back in time to that place where we too stood, essentially. So there is not just one heir apparent, then, as the Rambam reminds us. We all inherit the gift and honor of studying the Torah. Now, while this may represent a lofty aspiration, in practice, it's often very easy for the Torah to feel almost inaccessible, to feel as if it were out of reach for the average person, just as the crown of royalty might be, reserved only for an elite class. But there's another reality here. This is a commercial. And St. Petersburg Seminary and Yeshiva helps to make that reality possible or accessible. Why? Because even now, we're offering a course called Biblical Hermeneutics, or How Do You Interpret the Bible? How do you do your Torah study more effectively? End of commercial. But there's even more to our story. How many times have you read a story to young children only to hear them say, "Again!" Okay, I'm glad some of you had that experience. And they say it almost as soon as you finish. Sometimes even before you finish, because they know the story. Every year we read the Torah again. We even have this special holiday to celebrate the completion of the story and the excitement of starting it all over again. In fact, in the book of Joshua, in case you're wondering, that comes immediately after the text that Jacob read for us tonight. In the book of Joshua, God says that we study the Torah, or should study the Torah, on a daily basis so that we will learn how to live an enriched Jewish life before God. And so he said to Joshua, Joshua chapter 1, verse 8, "This book of the Torah will not depart from you, but it will be in your mouth, and you will meditate on it daily, so that your way or your life may be successful and prosperous, because in keeping these things, there's much reward." You know, I repeated those verses, I can't tell you how many times down through the years. It didn't occur to me, what does it mean to have it in our mouth? And then it occurred to me, dummy, what we just did. It's in our mouths as we read it aloud among ourselves. In Pirkei Avot, the very first section of the Talmud, and commercial part two, I hand out this saying in the hermeneutics class. So those of you who've been in the hermeneutics class, you're familiar with this saying. Ben Bag instructs us, quote, to turn it over and over again because everything is written in it. And in case you're not familiar with that saying, it's posted on Matt's wall. After all, the Torah contains great wisdom, but we need to read it again and again in order to catch all the nuance and richness that's found therein. Perhaps each time that we come back to the same story, we are in a little bit different a place than we were during the last reading. And therefore, we can see this story in a new light, from a new angle. In the Mishnah Torah, written by Maimonides, as I said, in the 12th century, tells us that there are different customs regarding the cycle of Torah readings. And I love this. You'll find that in a minute why. Some communities read the entire Torah in a year. There are other communities that read it on a three-year cycle. And that's the way it was back in the time of the Second Temple when Yeshua walked this earth. Regardless of the custom, every community celebrates Simchat Torah on a yearly basis. This is the power of unity over uniformity, which we celebrate together. We celebrate it together because we celebrate the holiday together, even though we can each maintain our unique customs. But that is part of the genius of Judaism down through the years. Down through the centuries and throughout the countries of the world, we have different customs, but we're all part of the same people doing the same things in somewhat similar and or different ways. We learn more about this in Proverbs. Proverbs says, "A numerous people is the glory of a king." Or let me rephrase it just a tad. "A variegated people is the glory of a king." Different people doing things in a different way for the same purpose. But wait, there's more. Now that the Torah has been read, is the story over? Well, let me suggest, get ready for Torah, the sequel, better known as the Nevi'im, or the prophets, followed thereafter by the Ketuvim, the books of wisdom and lyric. You see, the very first verse of the book of Joshua picks up where the last verse of Deuteronomy leaves off. And if you don't remember that, tonight, not now, take a look at the first verses of the book of Joshua. And then, where does the story go after the end of the prophets? Well, as I mentioned, there's Ketuvim, the books of wisdom. And it's from the Ketuvim that we also have the various Megillot scrolls that we read at the holidays. Then there is a journey, a journey through another or other Jewish texts that tell the story of the Jewish people during the Second Temple period. Those are the Jewish texts of the Newer Testament. So how does that story then influence your lives? Then there's even more. There's the story of our history as it unfolds after the Second Temple period. And there's the story of the writings of the ancient rabbis who tell us about how that unfolds and how it applies to us. Leaving behind a very important question. So what will your role be as you take your place as the next link in the chain of Jewish history? In other words, as the Jewish story winds in and out, as it will and has already, and as it goes on and on, what will your place be?